Blog Talk Radio.
This is ATL Designer, the host of In the Mood, and you are listening to Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle, right here on Blog Talk Radio. You know, Terry brings you all the hot topics for your listening pleasure. Each and every Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. And you can also reach Terry direct. Her number is 347-945-6003. That's 347-945-6003. So log in, listen, enjoy. I'll see you there.
Though I'm missing you,
Well, welcome, everybody, to another episode of Unmasked with authoress Terry E. Lyle. And that tune you just heard was by Brandy called Missing You. It was in the movie Set It Off with Queen Latifah, Vivica Fox, and, you know, those ladies did a great job. But tonight, I want to thank all my listeners from north to south, east and west for tuning in on a Friday evening, and all my listeners in Hawaii, the United States, France, Germany, Senegal, Australia, the UK, Canada, Nigeria and Cameroon, Africa, Singapore, Pakistan, Iraq, Peru, Russia, and India. So we have got some new people listening in, so I'm just so happy about that. And also, my special guest tonight is Mark Anthony Real. This is a ex-radio host, and he's coming back to radio after taking a hiatus to do what he wanted to do. And he's also very down-to-earth, and he shares his life openly. And I hope it's not you belching. Whoever it is, out of your mouth. You know, just like radio, when it's live, anything's bound to happen. But anyway, before we bring Mark on, I want to bring on first my co-host, Chris Michael Ward. How you doing, sugar?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
I'm doing great.
Very good.
Yeah, and I want everyone to know, too, as well, that Mark will be joining us from now on, me and Chris, as the other wheel to the trio that's going to be here, me, Chris, and Mark. We're going to do this thing, you know. So, hey, you know, stay tuned with us because we got a lot of show for you. And we're going to introduce Mark Anthony Real this time. How you doing, Mark?
Very good. Two queens in the house.
All right, that's right. And ain't nothing wrong with it, okay? It might say three queens. Hey, okay. But anyway, we're going to share a story of Mark's, and Mark's going to touch on a lot of things. He's going to talk about, you know, being gay. He's going to talk about his recovery from alcoholism, his lifestyle coming back to Christ, and he's going to give you all some valuable, you know, life wisdom nuggets, you know, to help you stay focused. And so I appreciate him being on here and being candid, because there's so many people out there that got some stuff with them, but they're afraid to be honest. But, you know, I realize that, you know, if you own your stuff and spit it out and say what it is, you know, can't nobody point their finger at you, and people will eventually accept you for however you are. But when you keep lying to yourself and thinking you're something that you're not, you know, you need to get a reality check. You know, so I know who I am as a person. I know my flaws, and I know I'm trying to do better every day to be a better person. So, you know, that ain't my issue. But y'all out there listening, you know who I'm talking to. You know, it's going to hit on your street. It might not be that you're gay, but you might be holding on to some things, and you think you're better than what you are. But we all have flaws. We all fall short. Don't lose all your friends because you don't know what to say out your mouth. You got to do the right thing, you know. So with that being said, I'm going to say, hi, Mark. And I wanted to ask you, tell me a little bit about yourself. When did you start drinking?
I started drinking in high school. I was 18, and I was that was back in the days when they bused Latinos and black kids over to the white schools here in San Diego, California, where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. I gravitated towards the African-American people because I had an African-American girlfriend. And, of course, all this time I knew I was attracted to men. So I gravitated when I went over to the white school. I started hanging out with the wrong crowd, and I remember leaving campus during lunch hour and going to a guy's van with a bunch of us and drinking Spaniata red wine. I don't know if you guys remember Spaniata, but that's what
he
liked
to drink. I don't drink. Do you know, Chris?
I don't know. I've never heard it.
That's way before Chris's time, I'm sure. This is back in the late 60s, early 70s. So I graduated in 1971.
Okay.
So I started drinking then, and of course it didn't take off. I didn't have problems with it at home. I could just, you know. And then later on in life, I managed to graduate, I ran away from home because my mother found out that I was in a gay relationship with a prisoner. I was writing to a prisoner that was incarcerated in one of the California prisons. I met him through The Advocate, which is a gay newspaper, and okay. We would write each other, these very, very graphic. He would write me very graphic letters of what we were going to do when he got out.
Woo!
You know, when he well,
hey man, he'd be backed up. He would get hurt.
Yeah, I was still in school. I mean, you know, when we started writing, this was around the 1970, I would say. Yeah, I was in my senior year of school, right? Anyway, my mother found the letters under my bed one day while I was at school, and she confronted me. Of course, she had an inkling that I might be gay, but she never confronted me about it. So one night she came home drunk. She came home drunk, and my mother wasn't a drinker by any stretch of the imagination. But occasionally she would get a little tipsy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she busted into our bedroom, my brother's and I bedroom, and she started accusing me of being a queer, and how ashamed she was, and she found the letters, and all of this I got, you know, just point blank. And
what?
I wound up throwing her on the bed and tearing her nightshirt off. And I had gotten a bus ticket from this other guy that I was writing to that lived in Hollywood. And he said anytime I want to use that bus ticket to go up to visit him, you know, use it. And I just happened to have that bus ticket. So I walked all the way from home, miles and miles to downtown to where the bus station was. And I took that bus, and I was still in school at that point. This is the other guy that I was having a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Chris, by the way. Anyway, I ran away from Hollywood. I walked to Hollywood, right there in the middle of Hollywood, across the street from the Columbia Studios. And I lived there until he got tired of me, and he was taking porn pictures of me were published. Oh yeah, and published in some kind of magazine, because back then it was the big thing was gay porno and magazines. It's not so much now, but I've never seen the finished product, but I know I'm in some of those magazines back in the 70s.
Wow.
So
well. I know Chris got a little question he want to ask you right now. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, Mark, how old was you when you came out?
Well, I came out pretty much after all that came about. I came out to my family. Of course, my mother knew. And after I came home and finished school, then I came out to the family, to the immediate family, not to the to my grandmother and people that, you know, that my friends. I was around 18 or 19, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark. You said that you had a black girl that you was going out with. So if y'all was sexually active, how'd you break it off of her? I mean, I'm sure you did that so people wouldn't know your secret, because I've heard that a lot of people, when they're gay and they haven't came out yet, they try to make it look as normal as possible. They get the opposite sex, you know. So how did you handle that? Because suppose she was feeling you and she didn't want to let you go, because there are a lot of women out there who are attached to gay men and won't let go.
Right. Well, we never got to third base. We did a lot of hugging and petting and kissing. We were still in school. And years later, we got together when I had my own place, and she came over, and we had very light heavy petting and that kind of thing, but it never got into the penetration point.
Okay.
It never got there because I wasn't feeling it, you know.
I guess you didn't want no fish for dinner. Okay, well, Chris, go ahead and ask your question, and then we'll take a break.
Okay. All right. No fish.
Well, Mark. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mark, who were the celebrities you looked up to as, like, you know, who were, like, your gay icons? Who were they?
Oh, well, of course, the Supremes. Back in when I was I was about a 9-year-old boy. First it was Patty Duke, because I love the Patty Duke show. I love the Miracle Worker. I had Patty Duke and Marilyn Monroe all over my bedroom. And then the Supremes came along in 1964 and changed my life forever. And it became all about the Supremes. I became a huge fan. I ran their fan club. I went to see all their concerts. And here in Las Vegas and Los Angeles, I met Diana Ross. I met all the original Supremes. That was my lifelong dream. And then after that, you know, it's all the usual gay icons: Cher, Bette Midler, you know, all of them. Madonna, Lady Gaga, of course. You know, so all of the traditional gay icons I love, but it all started with the Supremes. Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a small break, and we'll be back in 2 and 2 of Mark Anthony Real.
All right.
Eventually, the truth will come out of the darkness for everyone to see.
Hello? Hey, it's Mark. Hey, how y'all doing? Oh, yeah, everything's good. It's just been really good. Sorry I haven't been here this week. Yeah. Oh, I forgot, but I will be there this week. Right now.
There are times in your life when your faith will be challenged.
Hey, man. I want to share something with you. I accepted Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. He's been really wonderful to me. Don't you agree?
I feel like I'm my own God. For things that's been happening to me, I feel like I've been making those things happen.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me you don't believe in God?
Well, I haven't seen him.
The truth can come in shocking form.
Nobody up in my house when I'm at work all day.
No! Who is this? Why is he in my house?
Who are you, man?
Is this your mom?
Who are you? Mother, this is my woman and this is my house!
Oh, honey, my girlfriend.
Why is he in this house? What do you mean you didn't know?
When the secret is no longer hidden, you have now been exposed. Written by authoress Terry E. Lyle. Check out her website and on Blog Talk Radio every Friday at 7:30 p.m.
I met you in the dark. You lit me up. You made me feel as though I was numb. We danced the night away. We drank too much. I held your hair back when you threw up. Then you smiled over your shoulder. For a minute I'm stone cold sober. I pulled you closer to my chest. And you asked me to stay over. I said I already told you. I think that you should get some rest. I knew I loved you then, but you never know. I played it cool when I was scared to let go. I knew I needed you, but I never showed. But I wanna stay with you until we're grown old. Just say you won't let go. Just say you won't let go. I'll wake you up with some breakfast in bed. I'll bring you coffee with a kiss on your head. And I'll take the kids to school, wave them goodbye. And I'll thank my lucky stars for that night. When you look over your shoulder, for a minute I forget that I'm older. I wanna dance with you right now. Whoa, and you look as beautiful as ever, and I swear that every day you'll get better. You make me feel this way somehow. I'm so in love with you, and I hope you know. Darling, your love is more than worth its weight in gold. We've come so far, my dear, look how we've grown. And I wanna stay with you until we're grown old. Just say you won't let go. Just say you won't let go. I wanna live with you, even when we're ghosts. You were always there for me when I needed you the most. I'm gonna love you till my lungs give out. I promise till death we part like in a vow. I wrote this song for you, now everybody knows that it's just you and me until we're gray. No, just say you won't let go. Just say
a beautiful song by James. Yeah. Say You Won't Let Go. I just love that song because everybody wants to be loved, and you want somebody who's going to be in your life even when you're going through something, sick, throwing up, whatever. That's why I really like that tune. And welcome back, everybody, to Unmask. And it's a nice, beautiful weekend here in Alabama. I don't know what's going on in your part of the world, but I'm glad that you're here listening in. So real quick, I'm going to ask you a question, Mark, and that is, you started drinking in high school. Was that because you was hiding your homosexuality? And when, after that point, did you realize you had a problem that you needed to go to AA?
I originally started drinking to, like I said, to fit in at first. But then it became a crutch. It became a way to get out and go to the bars and using fake ID when I wasn't old enough to get into bars to order fruity drinks like, you know, a tequila sunrise. That was the first drink I had. Yeah. Fruity, you know, and I would go there and dance and be myself. And, you know, alcohol helped me back then. And then I started, after I finished my high school, I went right into the workforce, and I started working in restaurants as a waiter, as being a waiter, busboy, and working in hotels, and that went on for 15 years. And when you're working in the hospitality industry, it's almost a given that you drink, that, you know, you end your day going out to the bars with your coworkers, or going home with a bottle. So that became my life for a long, long time until, you know, finally I got my first DUI in, I think, the early 70s. And I back in those days, you could pay your way out of it, and they reduced my first one to a reckless driving. As long as I paid the lawyer $500. You can't. It's not easy like that to get out of a DUI like it was back then.
Yeah, well.
So started to get in trouble.
You know, rightfully so. So before I bring Chris on, when did you start going to AA? When did you realize that the drinking was out of control?
Well, I started going to detox, is what happened. The police would take me to detox to sober up. Back in San Diego back then, they had this place, I used to call it my second home, because I would get so out of control back then. And this was when I was working and a functional alcoholic. They would take me to go to sleep on the mats for 4 hours, and then they would let you go. But if you left early, they take you to jail if they caught you. So, I started going to the programs, to the sober living houses, because my family didn't know what to do with me. Then I started to go into Alcoholics Anonymous. As a last resort, because I had to get a nudge from the judge about my latest ticket or my latest infraction. I had to go to these meetings, and I resented them at first. I did not want to go to these meetings because I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, I just I just. Yeah, it's called denial, and denial's a river in Egypt, right? So I didn't fess up to the fact that I was a real alcoholic until much later.
Oh, okay. Well, Chris, go ahead, darling. Ask your question. You're so patient back then.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, he
well,
is.
Mark, I got two questions, Mark. First of all, what kind of alcoholic was you? Like, you know, there's two different kinds. There's the one who cry when they're drunk, and then the ones who fight. Which one was you?
I could be an asshole when I got drunk. I would remember going to this particular bar in downtown San Diego. It was called the Chi Chi Club. The Chi Chi Club. And it's still going. It was a toilet. But I loved it. I loved the jukebox. I loved playing the music. I loved getting picked up by men. I loved the whole scene because I was hot. I was hot stuff back then. So I was in demand, and I would always leave with some new man, you know, and go to his place or my place or wherever. I was very promiscuous back then. And yeah, I was drinking, and I would become bellicose, which I would cry, I would be violent. I could be violent when I got drunk. I was a blackout drinker, so I don't remember half of what I did when I was during those states. But it wasn't always like that. There was times where I could control it, but those were very few.
Yeah. I can relate to that.
Your question.
I was going to say, I can relate to that because I was a drinker like that too, so I can relate to Mark's story. And the other question, my other question for Mark was, does alcoholism run in your family?
Yes, sure. It runs rampant on my father's side. Most of my aunt died of alcoholism. My father, who's still alive today, was a very active alcoholic, but he had two heart attacks, so of course he doesn't drink anymore. Almost it's touched every part of my father's side of the family, so I believe that I inherited the gene that caused the alcoholism. And plus, homosexuality was also rampant in my father's side of the family. My mother's side of the family, not so much. So,
I've heard people say they have blackouts, but they're physically conscious, you know, because of alcohol or whatever. So this is my ignorance, I guess you could say. If a person is having a blackout and they're conscious, I mean, is there any point as you getting drinking and stuff or getting high, I guess it goes for both, where you don't you're so high or so drunk that you don't remember, and that's because they call that the non-memory blackout, even though you're physically conscious, or is there something that's going on inside the body where you're just, like, walking on remote control, so, like, I mean, you're just functioning, but you don't understand what's going on around you, you're just functioning.
Yeah, a blackout is a very, very scary thing. I can remember, you know, coming home at night in a taxi with no shirt on. I lost my shirt. I was in the dead of winter. I wouldn't have articles of clothing on. I would remember telling somebody off, a stranger off in the bar, and getting into fights that I don't recall. Your body, your mind, you are kind of in automatic control. And then you wake up the next day, and it's all a blur. And you don't know what you did. And then people start telling you. What I used to hate, Terry, is when people used to start telling me what I did the night before, because I did not want to hear what kind of person I was or what I said, especially what I said, because I thought, you know, I'm a nice guy. I wouldn't ever do something like that. Well, alcohol turned me into, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And
wow.
it is so powerful, you know, I didn't have just problems with alcohol. I had my nightmares with crack cocaine in San Francisco. I had my nightmares with prescription drugs as well. But nothing has brought me down as much as alcohol. And lately, I have had a couple of relapses. I just had one last month. I stopped on September 16th. I haven't had a drink since September 16th. And I've gone back to AA during the day. And, yeah, it's still plaguing me to this day, and I'm 64 years old.
What caused a relapse last month?
Well, what caused my last relapse was a relationship with a man and the fact that I'm trying to live a Christian life. I call myself a Christian who happens
to be a work in progress.
Right, exactly. Yes, and I want to live as a spiritual life, not a life in the flesh, because that's what I've been doing, and it's never gotten me anywhere. So I'm happiest when I'm living the way that I believe that my God wants me to live, and it's not out whoring around. It's not looking at pornography. It's not going to the parks and trolling for guys or trying to do it online, you know, that kind of thing. All of that stuff. Or the bars. The bars are all over with, thank God. Now I drink it. When I do drink, I drink at home. I drink, you know, solitary.
Yeah,
so,
well, you know, be careful, because when you start drinking solitary, then your mind starts saying, whoo, I want to have a party. Get somebody up in here. And, you know, then you run your little honey outside, and there you go, messing up. So it's best if you're an alcoholic and you know you've been an alcoholic and you go to these AA meetings, just, like, leave it behind you. You know, just let it go and just get your life right on other things. You know, drink Kool-Aid, shit. I'm a Kool-Aid lover. Okay? I mean, it ain't got to be alcohol. What they call them little drinks y'all drink, they call them wine coolers. I don't even know if that's considered a drink or not, you know, but just kind of like detox off the real alcohol. And, Chris, I'm going to let you ask your next question, and we'll take a small break, and we'll be back. So, Chris, get your question out there, and we got to go to a break after that.
Okay. Mark, did you lose a lot of friendships when you was an alcoholic? And if so, have you gained them back?
Oh, yeah. I lost a ton of friends. I hurt a lot of people, especially my family, my beloved grandmother, who stuck by me, gave me a roof over my head for a long time. Finally, she put me out. She put me out into the street, and I became homeless for a period. And I lost not only friends, I lost possessions, cars, apartments. I remember one particular part, a really nice apartment, and I was working in a hotel and room service. And I remember leaving in the middle of the month and sneaking out of there because I couldn't pay the rent because I was partying so much. So not only did I lose a lot of friends, I lost a lot more. And I became pretty much destitute on the street. And that's when I would have to check into a Salvation Army or one of those sober living houses and get on disability or that kind of thing. Yeah, it reduced me to a street bum. I was actually a street bum. So, since I got on SSI in 2004, I've had a roof over my head. You know, that's kind of saved my life and saved me from the streets. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Good for you,
well,
yeah.
We're going to have to take a small break, but I'm sure you're going to love this song because this song is by one of your icons, Mark. So I hope you enjoy this. Yes.
Baby.
You used to touch me. Baby, now your touch has turned so cold. You used to want me. Now, baby, you just want to let me go. I can see I'm losing you now. And I don't wanna, no, I don't wanna be just someone that you loved before.
Make it right. I can do anything
Peggy Lyle. And that particular tune is by the phenomenal Diana Ross, Someone That You Loved Before. And that was off of that movie that she did with Brandy called Double Platinum. She sung that song in that particular movie, and it still sounds good. And I want to thank all my listeners who's tuning in north to south and east to west. And wherever you may be in the globe, you know, just enjoy the moment. You know, some people it's nighttime and some people it's daytime. Wherever you at, just enjoy the moment and enjoy the people that you're with, because in a blink of an eye, they could all be gone. And our special guest tonight, Mark Anthony Real, he is sharing his life as a gay man, how he tried to hide it by being with a black sister. She didn't get nowhere. You know, if it had been me, I would have bust his little cherry. How he got into alcoholism and how he got his life back on track. But right now, we want to talk, Mark, while we got the opportunity, how did you decide it was time to get into your spiritual walk?
First of all, let me thank you for playing that song. I don't know if you guys heard, but I was singing right along. I know every word.
Really? Go, baby.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, that's a beautiful song.
I love that song. I love every song she does. You know, she can do no wrong. Anyway, what was the question?
I was saying, when did you decide to get into your spiritual walk? I mean, sometimes in everybody's life, we all mess up.
I can tell you exactly when that happened. I reached a point where, like I said, I had to go to one of those places to recover. And a lot of times you had to go to the church services to, you know, to stay there. This one particular place, it's no longer there, but it was called the Rescue Mission of San Diego. And I went as a client, you know, just basically get off the street, right? And that's where I went to sleep. And, you know, they provide a place for you. And that's when I started doing Bible
studies. Are you talking about St. Vincent de
Paul? No, not there. It's like that. I went through St. Vincent's as well, but I relapsed out of there. But before that, it was a rescue mission. It's no longer there now. They moved it. But I would be the usher at the church services, and then I became the coordinator of the men's coordinator, which meant I would be in charge of their belongings and spiritual thing. That's when I started to really look at the Bible and read the Bible, and that's what introduced me to a Christian walk. And then, of course, I went to Salvation Army. San Diego, San Francisco, San Jose. Each city has their own Salvation Army that primarily caters to the men with addiction who have, you know, lost their way. So that's how I was introduced, pretty much. And I was raised Catholic, Terry. My grandmother and I used to pray the rosary on the radio every night.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I was a Catholic, you know. Of course, I was doing my own. So,
well, don't be ashamed, because a lot of religions, you know, me included, I'm a preacher's kid, you know, but because of a bad relationship, like you said, you fell off the wagon last month because of a bad relationship. When my ex-husband cheated, I went to California, and I said, I'm going to never lose nobody because I'm inexperienced, and he cheated on me. So I said, I went out there, got buck wild, started my own swingers group, you know, so I could learn everything it was, you know, sexually. So, you know, it's a good thing that God has kept me, you know, and I'm still here, because a lot of things I did out there, you know, I could have been dead, but he kept me. You know, I don't have no diseases, never had none. I've never been incarcerated, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, he made me a better person, because when that right person come along, he's not going to only get a spiritual woman, a clean woman, a woman who brings something to the plate, but he's going to get a freak in the bed, so it's going to be all good. I learned some things. But you know, I had to go there. But go ahead, Chris, ask your question, darling.
I knew that was coming, Terry.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, Mark, like we said in the beginning of the, like Terry said in the introduction when she was introducing me, you used to be a former radio host. I've been on radio in the past as well, different shows. Where were some of the radio shows you've done?
As far as Terry's show is the first time that I've done any public speaking on the radio. Yeah, he was
my first male co-host, and he led me to another romance. Okay.
And Chris Michael, I was nervous at first. I was really nervous, but she guided me through it. And I'm not nervous anymore. It's like going on stage. You know, she pushed me on stage and was right there holding my hand. So she made it easy.
Yeah, she does a great job. I've done past things in radio, and I was made fun of on radio, so that's why I took a break. But I love being a part of this show. This show is awesome.
You sound like a natural for it, Chris Michael. If you don't mind if I call you Chris Michael, I like that.
Yeah, no, that's Michael's my middle name, but you go ahead, call me Chris Michael. Go ahead.
Okay, because my brother's name is Chris.
I might call him Darlin. I might call him Chris. I might call him CMW, whatever. But long as you know that I'm calling.
don't call me late for dinner, Chris, right?
No, that's right.
hey, Terry, you mentioned incarceration. I forgot to mention in my story that I wound up doing time in San Quentin. Did you know that?
Really? San Quentin? Oh, wow. They had a whole lot of big-time criminals there in the past. Was that where – no, it was Alcatraz. What's the guy, Capone? He was in Alcatraz, right? Was it San Quentin?
Yeah, it was in Alcatraz. But when I was there, Marlon Brando's son was there.
His sister's a boyfriend, right? Or husband.
He killed his sister's boyfriend named Dag Durlay.
Yeah, I remember because he was beating on her, so – I can understand. Wow.
Yeah, and I was there when Richard Ramirez was there, the Night Stalker, and they put me in a cell. With...
Yes.
Right. They put me in
Tell
a cell with
him.
A murder.
Real quick, Chris, you might not know because you're young man, but Ramirez, he was a rapist all through San Diego County, you know, because I was out there at that particular time, and that is when my brother sold me out for some crack. Not sold me. I mean, he tried to ingratiate himself with my friends so he could have a place to get high with, you know, and I was staying there because I was in transitioning from where I was staying at to there because the feds was looking for me because I was selling drugs, you know, and I was trying to go low cover, and that is the reason why I decided to go into the homeless shelter. And when I walked from her house all the way downtown San Diego to St. Vincent de Paul, I was scared as I could be because that was a time that this crazy man was killing everybody. Bodies were turning up everywhere. And I had to go through this Mexican neighborhood, you know, and they all looking at me all crazy. And it's dark. And I'm walking. So I started saying, I'm going to walk towards the curb because they might try to get me. I'm going to get hit by a car because y'all ain't getting nothing here. So, tell Chris about that guy Ramirez. That was something that made the headlines for a long time in California. Ooh, he was vicious.
Yeah, I know a little bit about that.
Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. He was there then. And, of course, I went in there because I damaged the stolen car. That was part of my alcoholism. I would take rental cars off lots and drive them off and go on joyrides up and down the coast. That was my thing. That was my MO. And they finally caught up with me in San Jose because I had damaged a late model Thunderbird. So I had never had any trouble before, but because I didn't pay that $800 damage I did to the car while I was drunk, they put me I violated probation. They gave me 18 months in San Quentin. And
his
kept
cell
going
was next to yours?
Huh?
You said his cell was next to yours?
Oh no! I would see him on the yard. I know, but they did put me in a place where there were hardened rapists and murderers. They I don't care what you did, and to get to San Quentin, they could put you anywhere, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up and right where the condemned row is, where death row is, right was right above me on the top floor. I was in that same building. It's called the North Block. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they can put you in. If you go into general population, they can put you anywhere they want to, unless you PC up, which means they segregate you because of you don't want to get hurt by other inmates.
Well, real quick, I'm going to ask this question. You know, a lot of times people, when they're out on the street doing whatever they're doing, they seem like they're fearless and hardcore, and nothing can break them. But because I used to be an ex-correctional officer for the feds and for the state, I realize that a lot of people inside, they're not as hardcore as they present themselves. They get violated, you know, they get poked in the butt all the time. One guy got a colostomy bag because they were just violating him. But when they get out in the street, they try to act all hard because they don't want anybody to know just how they are when they're on the inside. So that guy Ramirez, was he just as tough on the inside as he was on the outside?
He looked like a pussycat when you see him. I mean, he looked like anybody else. But who, how do you expect him to look? Some kind of Frankenstein monster?
I expect him to be looked all tatted up, got that rugged exterior, looking all hard, like, yeah, look at me, you know, body language, that's what I expect. Even though he was an attractive man, you know, I expected him when he went inside for all the things he did, that he would have his chest stuck out, yeah, like, come on, you know, because some people can be cute, but look hard, like you ain't going to mess with them.
No, he looked like he wasn't all tatted down, and he wasn't all muscular. He was kind of on the wimpy looking side, to tell you the truth. He was very light, but he looked like just a little lost kid is what he looked like to me. And everybody would point him out in the yard and say, hey, do you know that's a nice stalker, Richard Ramirez? And I said, really, him? I was surprised my damn self.
I'm telling you. Well, real quick before we run out of time, Chris, go ahead and ask your questions because we got 8 minutes on the clock, and I want to get your last question in there, darling.
Okay. Mark, where can people who are enjoying the show, where can they connect with you at on social media?
Oh, well, of course, Facebook. I'm a mad Facebooker, as you probably know now. Facebook. I don't do Twitter that much. I'm not your Donald Trump on Twitter. But I love my Facebook, and I've got 700 and some friends, and most of them I don't talk to, but I try to. But I love my Facebook, and that's where I can be reached, Mark Anthony Real.
That's right. It's spelled R-E-A-L. It's real. If you're from the East Coast, we call it real. Because when I went to California, it's a street called El Camino Real. And when I was driving on that long hill, and I was saying I went down El Camino Real, and then you said, it's not called real. I said, damn it, I know how to spell R-E-A-L is real. But everything out there has a Spanish flavor, so it's pronunciated their way, you know. So don't come out there talking shit because it's real. But I see it as real, you know.
Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby.
Baby. Yes. Come on, I know you know that song, Chris.
Yep, I do. Ain't nothing like the real thing.
Real
thing.
Okay, let's 1, 2, 3, go. I'm going to sing this song, then we're going to take it home. Hit it. Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby.
I forgot the word.
Yes. But we enjoyed having you here. And for anybody who's listening in, Mark Anthony Rowell is coming back to the show as my other co-host. So it's going to be all three of us. It's going to be three queens up in the camp, you know. So tune in next week. And next week, yes, it's going to be Dylan Brody, award-winning comedian and author. You want to tune in for that. So Dylan Brody is our guest coming in next Friday. And so, Mark, I'll let you go first, give your shout-outs, and then Chris, and then we're taking this thing home.
Okay. I, first of all, want to shout out my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ,
Amen.
Who countless times during my own follies, through my own doing my own thing, and he saved me from incarceration. He put me in a beautiful apartment, thanks to Section 8.
Yes, Lord.
I thank the Housing Commission for accepting me, and I have an apartment that the government pays most of the rent, so it's the only way I can afford this beautiful apartment. But anyway, I have so many people to thank, my family, and Miss Diana Ross. I give her the glory.
All right, Chris, is your opportunity, darling, to give a shout out.
Okay, I'd like to first give a shout out to Ralphie May's family. Ralphie May, he's a comedian. He died today.
Family.
You're
kidding. Really? No. I love him.
Yeah,
oh.
He died today.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard. Oh, I'm so. Oh, I love him.
Wow.
Go ahead.
And then shout out to my family. Shout out to my friends. Shout out to. Shout out to my God, and also
Amen.
Want to say for all my Jewish friends, Shabbat Shalom.
All right, and everybody, I want to thank y'all for tuning in, and we'll catch us next week. And be careful when you're out there; don't drink and drive, and don't do drugs. Peace, and we're out of here.
Your heart's broken. You sit around moping, crying. You say you even thinking about dying? Well, before you do anything rash, dig this. Everybody plays a fool sometimes. There's no exception to the rule. Listen, baby, it may be factual, may be cruel. I'm lying. Everybody plays a fool. Ooh. Falling in love is such an easy thing to do. And there's no guarantee that the one you love is gonna love you. Than any ocean, it clouds your mind.